I want you to try something with me right now. Wherever you are, just close your eyes for a second, sit perfectly still, and without touching your chest or your wrist or anything, just try to feel your own heartbeat.
Just kind of listen inward.
Right? Yeah, exactly. Listen inward. Now, for some of you, it's going to be immediate. You'll feel that rhythmic thump against your ribs, maybe even a slight pulse in your neck. But for others, you might be sitting there realizing you feel absolutely nothing but empty silence.
And it is a remarkably stark divide, honestly. You know, you either have immediate access to that internal rhythm, or you are just completely locked out of it.
Right.
And we often find that silence comforting. Like, we like to think of our conscious minds as entirely separate from the, you know, the mechanical thudding of our organs, as if we are just this floating brain operating a flesh and blood vehicle.
Which is wild, but that separation is exactly what we are dismantling today. I mean, we are so used to thinking about sensory perception as this outward-facing process, right? Like mapping the world outside of our skin so we don't, you know, trip over a chair or walk into traffic.
Yeah, the classic five senses.
Right. But there is this silent, constant, inward-facing sensory system at work every single second of your life. It's called interoception. And our mission in this deep dive into the sources from the OOTW Journal is to really explore how your brain perceives the internal state of your body.
It's fascinating stuff.
It really is. We are going to look at how this process literally builds your core sense of self, what researchers actually call the material me. Mm. And we'll look at the underlying mechanics of why intuition, you know, gut feelings, and mental health are so deeply tied to our internal physical state.
Yeah, and context is important here because science historically viewed these internal bodily signals as, well, unglamorous plumbing.
Just background noise.
That's exactly. Yeah. Maintaining blood pressure or tracking gastric distension, it was seen as mere autonomic housekeeping, operating way beneath the dignity of high-level conscious thought. But the research we are synthesizing today overturns that entirely. This inward sense is not background noise. It is the literal foundation of human emotion and identity.
Okay, let's unpack this a bit, because to understand how this works, we have to look at how the body physically sends this information upstairs. The OOTW Journal points to the foundational work of neuroanatomist A.D. Craig Budd-Craig, who published this massive paradigm-shifting paper back in 2002.
Oh, yeah. A truly landmark paper.
Right. So Craig mapped out what is known as an afferent sensory highway. And afferent just means bottom up, right? So signals traveling from the body up to the brain. He showed that there is this dedicated network constantly streaming data from your heart, your lungs, your gut, and like even your blood chemistry.
Yeah, and he traced that massive continuous river of raw physical data to a very specific target. And that's the insula.
The insula. And to ground this anatomically for you listening, if you point to your temples, imagine going straight inward about 2 inches, you'd hit the insula. It's this fold of cortex tucked deep inside the lateral sulcus, so it's completely hidden from the surface of the brain, and you have one in each hemisphere.
And what Craig observed about how the insula processes that raw data is highly specific. So the signals enter the posterior insula, the back portion, as distinct, isolated channels of information.
Like raw data points.
Exactly. Oxygen levels over here, a stretch receptor in the stomach over there.
Mm-hmm.
But as those signals travel forward toward the anterior insula, they are systematically integrated.
Woven together.
Right. So by the time they reach the front, they've been synthesized into this unified, moment-to-moment, high-resolution map of the entire body's physiological condition.
Which is just incredible. And Craig called this synthesized map the material me, because the brain is literally drawing a boundary of the flesh and saying, this is the state of the organism right now. So it's like, if your five senses are the windshield showing you the road ahead, interoception is the car's complex internal diagnostic dashboard. And if you think of yourself as this purely psychological construct, neuroanatomy is actually suggesting that your fundamental sense of being a distinct feeling entity is continuously assembled out of the physical state of your flesh.
That's a great way to put it. But if the anterior insula is the canvas where the self is painted, we have to figure out how to actually measure the clarity of that painting. And this is where the science gets particularly challenging.
Yeah, because how do you measure something so subjective? The sources highlight the heartbeat counting task as kind of the classic measurement for this.
Right, the Chandri task.
Right, where researchers ask a subject to sit quietly and count their heartbeats over a specific time interval without taking their pulse, obviously. And then they compare the subject's count to an actual EKG reading. But looking at the methodology in the journal, I kind of have to push back on how reliable this really is.
Oh, you're not the only one.
Because, I mean, if I'm sitting in a lab and I know my resting heart rate is generally around, say, 60 beats per minute, couldn't I just quietly count the seconds in my head and, you know, perform a math trick to get a high score rather than actually feeling the biological pulse in my chest?
This raises an important question, and the scientific community wrestles with that exact flaw. The heartbeat task is actively criticized for confusing estimation with actual sensation.
Makes sense.
Because interoception is still a young, somewhat argumentative field, researchers today have to be incredibly meticulous to isolate those variables. Modern studies distinguish between objective interoceptive accuracy, meaning the physiological signal was truly detected, and subjective confidence, which is just how well the subject believes they performed.
Ah, so confidence versus actual ability.
Exactly. And they also have to account for a general trait tendency to focus on the body, which, well, sometimes that could just be hypochondria rather than accurate sensing.
Right, just being anxious about every little twinge. But even with those methodological hurdles, there is definitive physical proof that this internal mapping system exists, right? And that it varies wildly from person to person.
Oh, absolutely.
The journal highlights this landmark 2004 study by Hugo Critchley that totally took this out of the realm of subjective guessing. Critchley's team actually put people inside an fMRI scanner while they performed these interoceptive tasks. They wanted to watch the blood flow in the brain in real time as subjects directed their attention inward.
And the findings there were definitive. When subjects judged the timing of their own heartbeats, neural activity predictably spiked in the right anterior insular cortex.
There's that dashboard again.
There it is. And the intensity of that activity directly predicted the individual's accuracy at the task. But, you know, Critchley's team found something even more permanent than just passing neural activation.
Yeah, this part blew my mind. They looked at the actual structure of the brain itself, the volume of gray matter in that specific region of the right anterior insula. Directly correlated with their interoceptor accuracy.
The physical density of it.
We are talking about neuronal cell bodies and synaptic connections. The sharpness of a person's inner sense is written into the physical architecture of their brain. It's like a highly attuned internal sense literally builds a denser insula, much like a muscle adapting to lifting weights.
It completely proves the mind-body connection is a measurable structural reality. And once we establish that the physical body is mapped so rigidly in the brain, well, it forces a complete reevaluation of how that map generates what we consciously experience as feelings.
And here's where it gets really interesting, because this flips the script on how we understand human emotion. Historically, society has operated on a very intuitive, top-down narrative, right?
Right.
You know, you see a terrifying bear in the woods. Your mind consciously registers the emotion of fear, and as a downstream result of that mental realization, your heart races and your palms sweat. Mind first, body second.
That's the standard assumption, yeah.
But the interoceptive model, which actually traces all the way back to the 19th century philosopher William James, reverses that causal arrow completely.
It does. Under the Jamian model, you see the bear, and your body reacts first, autonomously. Your visual cortex processes the threat. Your autonomic nervous system floods your bloodstream with adrenaline. Your heart races. Your chest tightens. A cold sweat breaks out.
The body goes into alarm mode.
Exactly. And then your insula receives all of that chaotic, bottom-up physical data, integrates it, and interprets it. That interpretation is the emotion. The conscious feeling of fear is just your brain's read out of your body's physical turbulence.
Which makes perfect sense when you consider that the brain is locked in this dark, silent vault of bone. I mean, it doesn't actually see or feel the outside world directly. It only receives electrical signals.
Right, it's just guessing based on the data.
Yeah. So if your physical body is the weather, you know, the rain, the wind, the dropping barometric pressure, your insula is the meteorologist locked inside a windowless station. The emotion you feel isn't the rain itself. The emotion is the meteorologist looking at the incoming sensor data, pointing at the map, and telling you, hey, a storm has arrived.
That is a perfect analogy. Emotion is fundamentally a physical readout. And honestly, this explains why the language we use for complex psychological states is inextricably physical.
Oh, totally.
Like when you go through a devastating breakup, you don't say, ah, my mind is processing a negative social outcome. You say you feel heartbroken. You say you feel gutted.
Or like when you are dreading an upcoming performance review at work, you say you are sick with worry. You literally experience actual physiological nausea.
Yeah, and this extends directly into how we process intuition, too.
Yeah.
A gut feeling is not just a poetic figure of speech. Your enteric nervous system, which is this complex web of neurons lining your gastrointestinal tract in your brain, are in a continuous high-speed dialogue known as the gut-brain axis.
Right.
The vagus nerve acts as this massive broadband cable carrying millions of signals from the gut straight to the insula. So a gut feeling is a genuine interoceptive summary.
Wow.
Your brain has integrated an enormous amount of environmental and bodily data way below the threshold of conscious language, and it surfaces that summary as a physical nudge. Your body is constantly voting on your environment, and the insula just tallies those votes.
That mechanism is so fascinating. But, you know, it brings up a crucial question. So what does this all mean for anyone listening who deals with chronic stress or anxiety on a daily basis? If our emotions are just the insula reading the physical body, what happens when that internal meteorologist starts getting the forecast completely wrong? Like, what happens when it starts calling for a Category 5 hurricane when you are literally just sitting safely in your living room?
To understand the mechanics of anxiety through this lens, we turn to a really pivotal 2006 paper by Martin Paulus and Marie Stein. They propose the insular view of anxiety, and their work relies on the understanding that the brain is fundamentally a prediction machine.
Okay.
It does not passively wait for sensory data to arrive. It actively anticipates the metabolic cost of what is going to happen next, so it can prepare the body in advance. Paulus and Stein argue that in an anxious individual, the brain carries a rigidly altered interoceptive prediction signal.
So it is essentially locked into anticipating a physical crisis that hasn't even happened.
Yes. It consistently overforecasts a severe bodily state. Mm-hmm. Your brain's top-down machinery predicts that your heart is going to race, your chest will tighten, and, you know, oxygen depletion is imminent. But right now, from a bottom-up perspective, your body is sitting quietly in a chair.
There's a mismatch.
A massive, irreconcilable gap between the brain's catastrophic top-down prediction and the actual calm, bottom-up physical reality. In predictive processing, this gap is called a prediction error. And detecting that massive error is what generates the chronic dread, worry, and physiological distress that we recognize as clinical anxiety.
So the brain is essentially hallucinating a bodily panic and then kind of forcing the emotional experience to match its own flawed prediction. That is wild.
It really is.
So we should be clear with the science here, just to maintain impartiality. The source material emphasizes that these are highly influential associations and hypotheses, right? Like, Paulus and Stein's work is a vital piece of the puzzle, but the insula isn't just some tidy, isolated interoception center that's solely responsible for anxiety.
Exactly. That's a really important caveat.
Yeah, it is a highly connected hub that processes disgust, physical pain, taste, speech, risk evaluation. We are looking at a map of a living scientific frontier here, not a definitive, closed textbook cure-all.
Right. And maintaining that scientific impartiality is essential. But even as an association, understanding anxiety as an interoceptive prediction error has massive therapeutic implications.
Mm.
Because if anxiety is driven by a mistuned top-down prediction of the body, then flooding the system with accurate bottom-up sensory data becomes a primary therapeutic target.
Which perfectly explains the underlying mechanics of why practices like breathwork and somatic meditation are so effective.
Yes, exactly.
When you sit and focus on your breath, you aren't just engaging in some vague form of, like, relaxing. You are actively training your attention on your internal physical sensations without reacting with top-down alarm.
You're forcing the issue.
Right. You are forcing the meteorologist to look at the actual sensor data, the slow pulse, the steady expansion of the lungs. You provide the brain with undeniable, calm, bottom-up data, which gradually forces the broken prediction machine to recalibrate and update its software.
You are systematically teaching the insula to read the room correctly.
Yeah. But, okay, if anxiety is the brain rigidly predicting a threat, what happens when we introduce a chemical catalyst that completely disorganizes that predictive machinery? Because the journal notes that this framework of interoception and the insula sheds unexpected light on profoundly altered states of consciousness, specifically the psychedelic experience.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, it makes a lot of sense. Psychedelics act on the brain primarily by binding to 5-HT2A serotonin receptors. And these receptors are densely expressed in the cortical layers involved in top-down predictive processing.
Okay.
So when a substance like psilocybin or LSD binds to these receptors, it essentially scrambles the brain's ability to maintain its rigid predictions about the world and the body.
Which tracks perfectly with how people actually describe psychedelic trips. I mean, the
Yeah.
accounts are rarely just visual hallucinations. They are overwhelmingly physical. People describe intense waves of bodily energy, the churn of nausea, and most notably, the feeling of their physical edges dissolving into their environment.
Right. And the mechanism of ego dissolution, what people often call ego death, becomes much clearer through the lens of interoception. We established earlier that the concept of the self is largely a high-level interoceptive prediction.
The material me.
Exactly. The insula draws a continuous boundary, predicting, okay, this is the material me, and everything past this physical barrier is the outside world. When psychedelics flood those 5-HT2A receptors, they disrupt the top-down prediction of that boundary. The mapping process fails. And without the insula enforcing the prediction of a separate, bounded physical self, the felt sense of the ego simply dissolves.
It's just amazing. It takes one of the most profound, mystical-sounding experiences a human being can have, the total dissolution of the ego and the feeling of oneness with the universe, and it gives it a beautifully grounded biological mechanism.
Yeah.
The self is taken apart temporarily because the brain's ability to map the physical boundary of the flesh is taken offline.
The insula serves as the silent factory floor where your embodied self is continuously assembled, millisecond by millisecond. And under those specific pharmacological conditions, it is where that assembly line is temporarily shut down.
Wow. So to bring this all together for you listening, your sense of self is not just a floating consciousness locked in a dark theater, gazing out at the world through the windshield of your eyes. You are a biological organism, constantly being sensed from within. The insula is taking the ancient silent language of your flesh, the thump of the heart, the stretch of the stomach, the chemistry of your blood, and translating it into the conscious feeling of being alive.
And understanding that the mind is built from the body offers such a profound shift in perspective, one that provides actionable insight into our own mental health and our decision-making.
It really does. So my call to you is to actively pay attention to that hidden system. The next time you are weighing a hard choice and a decision physically feels right in your chest, or the next time fear grips your stomach before your conscious thoughts even register a threat, pause. You are hearing your body's inner voice. You are experiencing the continuous data stream of interoception in real time.
And to close, there's one final nuance drawn directly from this research that is worth pondering long after we wrap up today. We noted earlier that the insula is a highly connected hub handling multiple complex functions, right?
Yeah.
Well, one of its other primary roles is processing empathy, our ability to cognitively and emotionally feel the pain or joy of others.
Oh, wow.
The exact same neural tissue is responsible for mapping your own internal heartbeat and processing your empathy for someone else. Does that mean our capacity to truly feel compassion for another person's suffering is biologically limited by our ability to literally feel the internal state of our own body?
That is a staggering thought to sit with. If we cannot feel our own pulse, can we truly feel someone else's pain? Before you move on to whatever is next in your day, try the experiment one more time. Close your eyes, don't touch your chest, just listen inward. See if you can feel the material you.